PPI.org.
Indian Month here live on KFAI. My name is Ahu Ho-Chunk Raja Wakunja Hade Indayunga. My name is Distant Thunder, and I want to welcome everybody here to this live symposium here. I think, you know, we've got a great lineup here of a couple people showing up here, and I want to thank everybody for being on, and really appreciate you spending some time with us. We've got a couple guests, and we have probably another one arriving here soon. I want you first to introduce yourselves. Would you mind doing that?
Hello, my relatives. My name is Michela Bowman. I am Dakota of Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate. And I just said in my language that I'm so happy to be here. And thank you for having me.
Well, really excited to have you, Michela. We have a lot of interesting and great things to talk about. I just saw a symposium you did with over 100 people about food. So I'm going to really want to swing back and talk to you about that. That was really exciting, and find out where that's available, because good medicine. And I like the whole fact that you can't read it in a book and it has to be handed down. So that really is good to hear. And we also have Patricia Kunish, and I always want to say Podine, but that's not you. That's my other favorite sister. Welcome here, and it's great to see you. And you have so much knowledge about the Indian country. But we're going to talk specifically about Lower Phelan and the Wakatipi Center today. But welcome. Tell us. Introduce yourself, please.
All right. Thank you. And I do wish I could speak the language like Michela. Very limited in language abilities, but I do like to say Shante Washteya Timaheyuhu, which is as I think about starting a conversation or inviting people to have conversations with us, is you come with a good heart. My family's from, I'm Patrice Kunish. And my family's from the Standing Rock tribe in the Dakotas, on the North Dakota side. And Robert was referring to my sister, Mary Kunish Podine, who's a state legislator, who's been doing some really awesome work on behalf of our Native communities and Native nations here in Minnesota. My work right now is really focused on community and economic development. And I serve on the board of the Lower Phelan Creek Project, along with and work with Michela and Maggie Lorenz and many others. There's Maggie, to really highlight and emphasize the incredible resources we have in our backyard, literally our backyard, that we need to preserve and we need to celebrate and hopefully develop more.
I forgot to add that I am the Communications and Outreach Associate for Lower Phelan Creek Project. I started working for Lower Phelan around January of 2018, I think. And my Diné auntie, Sierra Asamoah Tutu, who works over at the American Indian Family Center, had sent me the application to Lower Phelan Creek Project when the job became available. And it started off as just a 4-month internship, and I'm blessed that this became a permanent position for me. So I've been working for our organization for almost 3 years now and loving every second of it.
And not only does she love it, she brings so much creativity and visualization and description to the work. It really makes it much more accessible. So we love Machinia.
And I like how you stay on your junior elders over there and keep them in line. Speaking of junior elders, we got Maggie Lorenz here. Welcome, Maggie. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Hey, sorry, I'm joining a little late. I had some internet connectivity issues over here. But I'm Maggie Lorenz, and thanks for having me on. I'm the executive director for Lower Phalen Creek Project and the director for Waukon Teepee Center. And super excited to be here with you guys today and just share more about our work and more about our project with Waukon Teepee.
That's awesome. Maggie, I would like you to take a little control of the show right now. Probably your heart's pounding really hard because you got to get on. So I'm going to just throw it to you and talk about the work you guys do, and then maybe I'll have a few questions. But I think it's really exciting. What I've experienced with your work just from an arm's distance of what you've been doing. So let our audience know.
Sure. Well, I've been with Lower Phalen Creek Project for about a little over a year now. I joined the team as the executive director March of 2019. But prior to that, I was a board member for about 6 months. And then prior to my board service, I was a volunteer with the organization and also on a just a contract basis doing some cultural connections in the community, so some community work. So I really got involved with Lower Phalen Creek Project because I'm an East Sider. This is an East Side St. Paul nonprofit. And the mission of the organization is to engage people in honoring and caring for our natural places and the sacred sites and the cultural values within them. And that mission really resonated with me. And, at the time I had just, stepped away from my work as a educator in Indian education. So I had been doing that for about 6-8 years, something like that, between my work with Metropolitan State University as the American Indian Student Services Support Specialist. And then I worked with St. Paul Indian Education for a number of years in the Check and Connect program pilot. And we had a chance to work together in that capacity. You're a teacher over there at Harding High School. So I had a lot of fun doing all of that, and working with students is still something I really enjoy doing in our work at Lower Phalen Creek Project. And then on the hobby side of my life, I was learning more and more about plants and native plants and our traditional uses for plants as medicine and food and resources. And being in nature and learning about butterflies and bees and different kinds of birds. I just got into birding recently. So all of this has just been more becoming important to me and part of my life. And so that's how I became involved with Lower Phalen Creek Project as an environmental nonprofit here in my local neighborhood. And the part that really drew me in, of course, was the piece about the way that this organization works with and interacts with these parks and green spaces and natural spaces on the East Side, and that intersection with culture, and how these places, and really recognizing how people connect with nature through their culture. And of course, this St. Paul and the Twin Cities area being Dakota land, the organization was taking a really big step over the past couple of years to learn more about the history, the Dakota history of the land, the significance of some of the areas that we were working in St. Paul, specifically in Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary and Indian Mounds Regional Park, which contains sacred sites and burial sites. So the organization was taking a lot of big steps in trying to connect with the Native community and learning more about those places and learning how to honor and protect those sites as cultural spaces, rather than a lot of environmental work really just focuses on you know, conserving land for recreational use or conserving land for, you know, the aesthetic value, kind of escape from the city, which is also nice, but really, this is taking that, all of that a little, a step further and talking, and we're really looking at how people connect with nature, and their natural world through the lens of their cultural community.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's talk about how you get the word out and maybe the two differences of what we're going to talk about today, the Lower Phelan, Creek Project and also, Wacompeag Teepee Center, you know, so how do we get the word out?
We'll get the word out about our work. I mean, folks can follow us on Facebook. We have social media, Facebook and Instagram. And thank you so much to Michaela. She's done so much amazing work with our website and our Facebook and social media pages and Instagram. So thank you so much, Michaela, for doing all of that amazing work. And then right now, one of our biggest projects that we've done. So just to give you a little bit of background about Lower Phelan Creek Project, we do a lot of conservation work on the east side. And one of our biggest conservation projects to date was the establishment of Bruce Medwell Nature Sanctuary. So this is a 27-acre nature sanctuary on the east side of St. Paul. It's right below Mounds Park in the river valley on the floodplain there. And the this used to be abandoned railroad land. And so the organization, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, worked really hard to get this land conveyed from the railroad to the city of St. Paul and then established as a sanctuary site and did a lot of work to do the restoration and then had a conservation easement put over the land so that there could be no further development there. This is land that had been used really heavy industrial, really toxic land, soil, and it's all been remediated and it's just a gorgeous site now. So if folks haven't, this is really kind of like a hidden gem too in the Twin Cities that a lot of people aren't familiar with. So I would highly recommend that people check out this sanctuary. There right now, a lot of warbling, like birds are migrating through or nesting there in the spring right now. So it's a great spot to check out and just get into nature without having to drive too far. So that was one of our biggest projects. But during that, we learned, the organization learned about the sacred site. And at the time, they didn't have any Native American involvement on their board or in their leadership. And so they did a lot of community outreach to the Native community to learn more about the site and then made a really big step in 2017 with an effort to become a Native-led organization, which we just accomplished last year in 2019 with myself coming on board as the executive director. And then we had two additional Native board members, including Patrice, also Kate Bean from the Historical Society. And then we've had Thomas Draskovic on our board now for about 3 years. He's teaching also in St. Paul Public Schools at the American Indian Magnet School. So in learning about this sacred site, the organization decided through a lot of community surveys and community outreach that what people wanted to know at this place was some interpretation of these sites and how to interact with these sites in a respectful way. And so in order to do that, we have created a template for a new cultural and environmental interpretive center that will be at the entrance to this sanctuary so that people can learn more about the site. And that's the project we're working on right now. It's a $6.7 million construction project. And we have a $7.7 million capital campaign to support that and the operations for the next 20 years. So, you know, that's our biggest project that we're working on right now. And we're really well into that project. We've raised a lot of money, $5.3 million. So we're doing really good on our goal, but we're hoping to break ground this fall.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Go ahead, Patrice.
I was wondering if Michelle could speak a little bit more about, you said, how do we get the word out? Because she has created an amazing visual of of the property, of the sanctuary. But she also has a lot of programs that are inviting people to come in. And even at this time of safe social distancing, the Bruce Bento Nature Center Sanctuary and the area around Roncon Tepe is very accessible. So maybe, Michelle, you could talk about what it looks like.
Sure. I think first it's important to kind of talk about why our work is so important, and that Waukon Tepe Cave is a Dakota sacred site that's nestled in the back end of Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary, right along that beautiful bend of the Mississippi River. And so that cave, we know from, you know, histories of Dakota oral tradition that there are sacred beings that dwell in there, like Uktehi, our water spirit. And so when we say Waukon Tepe, we're talking about, though there are many translations that we can use for English, we're really talking about this place as a dwelling place for our sacred beings, or the place where these sacred beings, you know, live or reside in. And so much of our work is not only protecting that sacred site, but uplifting that history and that knowledge that seems to go under the rug most of the time. So a lot of the work that I do is surrounding uplifting those narratives of, like, our Dakota, you know, ties to this area in a historical sense, but then also like a contemporary sense, and making it so that this place continues to be a sacred site for our future ancestors. So a lot of the work that I do has to, or revolves around creating content so people can visually see the events that have taken place there. Maggie talked about that this area has a very rich industrial history. So part of that has to do with the railways coming in and blasting the bluffs and our cave. So those petroglyphs that honored those sacred beings that are in those caves are completely gone now. And so a lot of what I do has to do with creating visuals that portray this history of what the site used to look like, you know, pre-contact, and then what industrialization did to it. And then now what we're doing as an organization to bring in Native and non-Native people into this site to uplift these histories and connect our, especially Native youth, to this site as well. So like Maggie and everybody has said, we have our Facebook is just new. We have a new Facebook page as of February. So if everybody could please like that, that'd be awesome. It's at Lower Phelan Creek. So is our Instagram, which is both fairly new, but, and then also our website. And we have so many programs that, are all around cultural healing and connections, as well as, you know, our work in restoration, conservation, and environmental education. I'm sure Maggie can speak a little bit more about all of our different programs and what we do.
Yeah, I know, I was down there with some students with Maggie and planting some sage and some other things. And it was really fun. And there's a lot of medicine down there, as I'm hearing. So Maggie,
and you have planted any? Some choke cherries too, right?
That's right. I only did the sage for some reason. And there were some other things, but there's snakes and everything down there. But yeah. Maggie, maybe you can speak on that and what you have to offer for once we get to social distancing relaxed a little bit.
Oh, sure. So, like I said, our organization started off doing really a lot of urban conservation work. So this project in establishing Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary was a huge effort for such a small group. At the time, we weren't even a registered 501c3 nonprofit. We were just a group of volunteers undertaking this effort. So we've grown a lot since then. And now we offer program. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We gained that status in 2011. And we offer programs in urban conservation and restoration. So a lot of our projects are smaller scale now than establishing 27 acres of nature sanctuary. But we do a lot of smaller scale restoration projects like rain garden installations. We've done a lot of trail connection projects on the east side of St. Paul. So the east side is really, a lot of people don't know this, but has the most green space in the entire city of St. Paul and the largest connection of trails in the city. So we do a lot of work to try to connect those trails so that people can really get out and enjoy all of the parks and green spaces we have to offer and connect to one another. So we've done trail connections and wayfinding signs and things like that so that people can enjoy these spaces more. And then we do ongoing restoration projects within the sanctuary. So we'll have volunteers come in and do invasive species identification and then removal of those species, native plant plantings. So putting in, like, you came down pilot with your students and we put in some sage and some choke cherries and June berries, which are all culturally significant, really important plants with medicinal and food use for Dakota people, but also provide great habitat for birds and pollinators and other wildlife. So we do those types of projects as well. And then we do environmental education programs. So these are kind of monthly programs that we offer. This month, we just offered, actually just a couple of days ago, a plant medicines webinar that kind of broke our Zoom account a little bit. We had so many people that were interested in this webinar. We unfortunately were not able to host everybody who was trying to sign in. So, but we do have it recorded. So we'll be posting that here this week.
I was there. It was awesome. Yeah, I was there. It was awesome.
You were able to join. That's great.
Yeah, it was crazy because it was fall and then I tried again and I got in. It was like bingo. but it was really awesome. I want to cut in here for a second. I want to ask Patrice something about how to help. But first, I want to read this. I want to say Peeny Gee to the Minneapolis Urban Indian Directors for supporting this hour of programming on KFAI Fresh Air Radio. So I just wanted to say that. And now I want to go to you, Patrice, and say, hey, how can we help? What can we do? Oh,
that's just the right question, Robert, because as Maggie said, we're in the middle of a capital campaign to get the funds necessary to build Wangkan Teepee, to continue these programs, to make it much more accessible to the metropolitan community and beyond. And so Maggie has been leading a really fun and I think progressive capital campaign for Wangkan Teepee. I think one of the most satisfying parts of this for me is the extensive community support, individual community support for this project. But we were also able to receive a very large grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. And we were able to match that with existing dollars and new funding. So we will have a really fantastic, national support for the project as well. But construction costs are expensive, and Maggie was able to get some bonding money from the state of Minnesota a year or so ago. And we're back before the legislature right now asking for a little bit more funds so that we can complete this project. As Maggie said earlier, we'd like to break ground this summer, late fall. And just today, I received notice from my sister, the legislator, Mary Kunish Pudin, that Wangkan Teepee is indeed included in the Minnesota Department of Economic Development's bonding request. And I just want to make a little bit of an aside here. For the first time, I think, ever, we had, let's say, like a dozen Native groups go before Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, looking to get some parity and equity around state funding for these ongoing projects and services to our Native communities. And this year, we all got together and we identified our various planning needs and capital needs. And then we were able to use sort of this collective energy to put before the Minnesota legislature a bonding bill. And I just received notice this morning from the State House of Representatives that these programs have been added to the bonding bill, the Minnesota bonding bill. So that was a huge hurdle to begin with, just the advocacy, the education, the sharing the information. I think it was really unprecedented how we were able to really talk contextually about the value of this work. And as we talk about the historical, cultural, environmental value, I also want to add that there is a financial or economic value too, because the center, $7 million and then ongoing operations and then the traffic, tourism and site viewing, I think this could be a real nice hub for the community. So we have to remember that this is also an economic value to the community. So what we need to do now is, now that we got the Wankan Teepee in the bonding bill, we need to ask our legislators, especially in the Senate, to support this and to vote for it. And we know that this is a really tough year because of COVID and the real strains on our economy and economic investments. But this to me definitely has a discernible return on investment and incredibly valuable to not just the east side, to the St. Paul community, but really beyond. One thing that I love when Maggie talks about is this interconnection with history and space and geography. So we talk about the Mounds Park, and then we talk about Wankan Teepee, and then we talk about Bedote and our Dakota communities. We're all interrelated. And we could really bring this out and highlight the relationship of these sites and our people and in our shared histories.
Yeah, that's awesome. Before I get back to you, Maggie, I want to ask Michelle about that Zoom party you had. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because to me, I was like going, I was doing other things at the same time and listening, getting ready for my other radio show. And it was like, I need to be taking notes here. It was a beautiful, and the guests you have, maybe you can just talk a little bit about that.
Of course, I would love to. So this past Saturday, we hosted Pejuta Wo'iyaksape plant medicine teachings from our friends and relatives, knowledge keepers, really, Nikki Buck, Holy Elk Lafferty, and Linda Black Elk. So both Nikki and Holy Elk are women of the Ocheti Shakoi. And Linda is Catawba, but grew up on the Standing Rock Reservation. So these women just are a forefront for food sovereignty and returning to plant medicines and relatives. And so we hosted this webinar because we've noticed that our community is really calling for more information for health and well-being during this time of pandemic. So we wanted to uplift how important, upholding these relations with our plant nations are. But more so, we started off the webinar with Holy Elk, uplifting that we're in a very unique position right now amongst this pandemic in that so many people are returning to, harboring relations with plant relatives, but this is also a time for Unshi Maka, our Mother Earth, to heal. And so we didn't want this webinar to be you know, a showcase of here's this plant, now go harvest it all, you know, because I feel like that is kind of what I've been seeing, at least, is this return all, or this return to plant relatives as being harmful. And, you know, we've heard from Linda and Nikki that some folks are over harvesting some of these medicines. And so we wanted to start off this webinar by talking about, okay, what are the protocols? You know, what does it mean to live in reciprocal relations with our plant, you know, relatives? And how do we engage in these medicines while also leaving space for Mother Earth to heal right now? And so we had a beautiful exploration from Holy Elk and Nikki on the power of incorporating plant medicine into your diet and how food is one of the most powerful sources for health and well-being, especially in Native communities. And then we had Linda Black Elk give us some easy and common alternatives to really sacred medicines. For example, you know, I'll just talk about what I can remember off the top of my head. If you are not able to go pick sage, for example, you can go to the grocery store and burn rosemary because it's almost as antimicrobial as sage and even slightly more antiviral. We also talked about how dandelions are an amazing source for getting your digestive tract, you know, working and healthy. Rose hips, if you're able to find those, just three of them, Linda said, were like the more than enough vitamin C than entire grapefruit. And then just incorporating like extra garlic and onions and oregano and thyme and all these things that we have sort of laying around, but we can plant them outside and we can go harvest those things, but we have to do it in a way that is not furthering harm to our Mother Earth. And it was a beautiful experience. I wish that our Zoom, we had a slight problem in our Zoom and that we had over, you know, 1200 people interested and wanting to go to our webinar, but our Zoom kind of maxed it out at 100. But I just want to, yes.
We need to do this again.
Yeah.
Maybe a monthly or bi-weekly
thing. Yeah, something. I just wanted to reiterate, though, that we were able to record the session, and later this week, I will be getting those up on our website. I'll be sending emails to those people who were able to attend, as well as I'll post it on our social media, so our Facebook and Instagram at Lower Phelan Creek. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I think when, you know, there's a Chinese symbol called dangerous when an opportunity, and every crisis is a dangerous opportunity.
Yes.
And I think the webinars, more radio, I do a symposium every Sunday nights that are get the word out. And that it's just, I think we're trying to really, really, really do that. And I see that. And I just want to say, Patrice, I don't know you as well as the other two here, but I am so proud to know you and call you friends because of what you're doing, you know. And I was really excited that I was going to be able to interview you guys because, one, I know you talk a lot, so I won't have to work that hard. But no.
Go
ahead.
That Maggie and Michaela and the team at Lower Phelan Creek has so much good energy, really, truly, so much good energy. And they are, they're incredibly sincere, and they live the way they work. You know, the plant medicine is not just something unique or interesting or a specialty. I believe Michaela and Maggie practice this every day too. So we're learning from them all the time. And I think their generation is who's going to help us save this world. I honestly, truly believe that they are the ones. What's the word for Mother Earth, Michaela? Unchi?
Unchi Maka.
Unchi Maka. I do believe that this is the calling. And what I think of what Lower Phelan Creek, Wangkan Tipi can do for us at this time, and there's so much healing, mental, emotional, you know, worldly healing that needs to be done. This is a place that draws me. You know, it really, really draws me. Another point that I wanted to sort of highlight is Michaela talked about the petroglyphs inside the caves that were destroyed by the blasting of the bluffs by the railroads. And it would be fantastic to get the railroads part of this project, because there's an incredible history there with railroads and Indian country, number one, but the destruction of this storytelling, form, the petroglyphs. But I understand that there is a large slab, or a couple of large slabs, or at least etchings of those slabs in the Minnesota Historical Center. And those should be looked at, because I think it would be pretty amazing to discern the, not just the history, but the way of life, these practices and so forth from those pictographs.
They need to probably give them to the new center that you guys are building and have them on display.
Well, if you've ever seen our pre-designed renderings from the building, you'll notice that on the glass panels of the building will hopefully be etchings of those petroglyphs. Yeah. And so, whenever I'm doing site tours at Wakantipi or Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary, I always tell people that it's not just, Native Indigenous people that have healing to do. Like, our Unchimaka needs healing too. There's so much trauma that we have gone through as people. But if you think about trauma in terms of land and how she holds that, those railroads, they just like blasted the bluffs and like put their tracks down and carried diesel and all these other contaminants that made the soil toxic. And so much of our work highlights not only the need for cultural healing for our community and non-Native communities, but also acknowledging that like we all need to be doing our part to assist in the earth's healing and making sure that we're not doing further damage. And so part of the thing about our webinar that we just had this past Saturday is really reiterating that, harvesting and having relations with these plant nations is so much about your spirit connecting to them. So much of our work is breaking down the barrier that we see in settler colonial society that likes to pit humans against nature and animals. And so our work is about, erasing that barrier and doing what we can as, two-leggeds to do our part and to not only connect our bodies and like the restoration of this work, but our spirits and our minds. Everything is an embodied experience with us, and everything that we have to do needs to, follow those lines.
So the cleanup down there, and Maggie's not there now, but I understand that there's 5 feet of new soil put in there when they clean that up.
Yeah, so our organization, like when we all started as Community Hands in 1997, took out 50 tons of trash that was in that sanctuary. So that was, ranging anywhere from like these giant couches and refrigerators to just like bags of trash. And, the soil was completely contaminated. So our organization remediated that soil and put a 6-foot cap of new clean soil on there. And so within the sanctuary now, there are 6 beautiful, thriving ecosystems. And not only that, but we see, a return of wildlife. So foxes, deer, a couple people have seen coyotes there, birds, so many birds. For the first time in 50 or 60 years, we have the first eagle's nest that has returned. So if that doesn't speak to the work that we're doing, I don't know what does. Every time I go down there and I see that eagle's nest and I see those eagles soaring, it's like a reclamation that, this is our home and that we're back,
Yeah, I agree. And that's so awesome. I just want to say that we're talking to, we're talking about the Lower Phalen Creek here in St. Paul and the Wakampi Tipi Center that you guys are fundraising for, that you're really close to your goal. Maggie, I saw a message that she's having a little problem with her internet going in and out. So I just want to read one thing here too, real quick. This special programming for American Indian Month on KFII. It takes place on Mondays from 2 to 4 and Saturdays 3 to 5. So I just want to throw that out there. And I really want to thank Special Programming for American Indian Month is made possible by the Minneapolis Urban American Indian Directors. So I just want to get that out there because it's really important to talk to people that are sponsoring the station and our programming here. We didn't have our parade. We didn't have our 18 hours of programming on KFAI, and they've been really generous about spreading it out for the whole month. But I don't know about you two, but Indian Month is every month for me. But hey! But so, Patrice, tell us a little bit what else you do. I just I know it's amazing. You know, you came in and talked to Cromwell about his tribe down there and knowing him and the and working with that tribe down there. Can you just say a few things about that and then what's going on down there?
You're referring to the Mashpee Wampanoag situation and Cedric Cromwell, who's the chairman of the Mashpee Wampanoags. There's actually two Wampanoag tribes. One is the Mashpee that we were talking about on the coast of Massachusetts, and the other is the Aquinnah, which is on Martha's Vineyard. And in my work, I'm also a lawyer, and I've worked for tribes around the country doing lots of different legal work and economic development work. And I've really followed the Mashpee tribe, both from its recognition days when I was working for the Native American Rights Fund, through its recognition, hard-fought recognition, and trying to reestablish its land base, a reservation, a federally recognized reservation over which the tribe would have its own sovereignty. And I was a solicitor for Indian Affairs in the Obama administration, and this is in the Department of the Interior, when the issue came up of how do we define land for Mashpee. And in a very hyper-legalistic, technical way, it's incredibly unfortunate that the Eastern tribes that were the first to encounter the non-Indians actually have been treated in some of the worst ways because they dealt with the colonizers, and the colonizers were from Spain, they were from Italy, they were from all parts of Europe. And it was only after the United States became, you know, a United Nations, you know, declaring its independence from England, that the United States had to figure out how are we going to deal with the Native people. Well, Mashpee had always existed, always had hunted and fished and collected their herbs and so forth in that very same spot. But by a twist of fate, a very terrible, tragic twist of fate, they are not allowed to have land held by the federal government for the use of the tribe. And when I was in the solicitor's office, we were working very hard to create the legal argument backed up by this history, by the course of dealings, that they were entitled, they were eligible to have this land. And we actually wrote a legal opinion, a very extensive, authoritative legal opinion that was the underpinning of the Secretary of the Interior's decision to take land into trust for the Mashpee. And just recently, the current administration reversed that decision. They had previously revoked or removed the legal opinion, which was the authority to take this land into trust, and then they removed the land out of trust, which is completely unprecedented. And it's tragic because this tribe is one so deserving, so absolutely committed to its community, to its governance, to its culture, And for this to happen, tragedy just doesn't sort of describe. It's changing the whole world view. Cedric Cromwell is a fantastic leader, and I know he's going to persevere. And I think we can get some legislative fixes to this. We really need to advocate on a national level to right this very terrible wrong.
I think they're in court today. A judge kind of threw out that, they did it with talking to him. They did to him in the middle of the night. He was just blindsided when he was on the symposium talking about that. I was just blown away. But thank you. And he really recognized you and Petey Geegee for all your work with the tribes, mm-hmm. too. And it looks like we got Maggie back. Yay. Maggie, what happened to your bangs, Maggie? You got the flow going again. Welcome back.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know. My internet is just, I have 3 kids and they're like just really connected to their internet. So it's hard for me to get a good connection sometimes.
Well, I don't know if you caught this, but I'm so proud of knowing you and all the work you're doing and have done and your family. It's really my pleasure to be here with you three. So we only have let me take a quick here. Oh, we got 15 minutes. So, hey, let's tell some stories about each other. No. So what else would you like to bring up? Because this is very important. We got maybe people just jumping in their car and listening right now. Let's do a little quick overview of what we're talking about here, Maggie.
Sure. I'm Maggie Lorenz, and I'm the executive director for Lower Failing Creek Project and the director for Wakantipi Center, which is a environmental and cultural interpretive center that we will be breaking ground to construct this fall of 2020 at Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary in St. Paul in honor of Wakantipi Cave as a Dakota sacred site, and to interpret the not only that site but the surrounding Bedote landscape. So I'm really excited to be here with all of you guys and talking to everybody and answering any questions people might have about this project. But I think maybe on the last few minutes here we could probably ask Michela to talk a little bit about what we have coming up for our American Indian Month event later this month. Michela and our new program manager, Sam Wagner, have been doing a lot of work putting this American Indian trivia night together. So Michela, do you want to talk about that a little?
Sure. So to celebrate American Indian Heritage Month for Minnesota, we have been trying to put on 2 different programs this month. One I already talked about was our Pejuta Wo'iyaksape, a plant medicine teaching webinar that happened this past Saturday. But we will have one more event for the rest of this month, and that will be American Indian Trivia Night, which will be May 28th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. And so that will be the same thing, just hopping on a Zoom call. And it's going to be super fun. We are going to test your knowledge of traditional medicines, Dakota place names and words, along with the Minnesota tribal history and indigenous pop culture. And so again, I'm just going to reiterate to follow our Facebook and Instagram at Lower Failing Creek, because throughout now until May 28th, we'll be kind of filtering on our social media some question examples. So you want to pay attention to that if you are planning on joining us. But most excitingly, and my favorite part of this event, is that if you win, if you're a trivia winner, all of the prizes will be from local indigenous artists and business owners. And so what a wonderful thing right now to support our native community members during this time of pandemic. And so not only would you be joining us for some really super fun trivia about a variety of subjects, but you will be supporting indigenous artists.
Well, I hope there's some Ho-Chunk trivia in there.
Okay. You'll have to follow us on our social medias and attend our event.
Or Robert, give us a trivia, a Ho-Chunk trivia.
Yeah, well, I think the trivia I'm wondering about is, did they have anything to do with the caves? I heard that there were Ho-Chunks here a long time ago. Maggie, do you have a response?
You know, this, yeah, Wakan Teepee has been visited and documented that it's been visited by more tribes than just Dakota people. In 1913, there was a delegation that came from Montana, the Blackfeet tribe, to come and pray at the site and visit the site while they were in the area and the region. So it's pretty well documented that this site was revered by more nations than just Dakota people. And you're right, Ho-Chunk Nation has a long history in Minnesota. They were exiled right alongside Dakota people after the U.S.-Dakota War in 1862. So we have, our two communities have a strong connection, and, you know, and being allies in a lot of really hard times. So, there, you know, that right there, what I just, talked about may be part of our trivia. So people who are tuning in might have a leg up on one of the answers.
And also, we didn't eat people, Maggie, just tell your significant other that.
I can't tell him that. I think you guys are going to have to battle that one out.
Well, this has been really awesome here. And that'll be on the 28th, which is a Thursday, which is a good night for me because I'm not doing anything, you know, except social distancing and watching the rest of Ozark. But Patrice, do you have anything? What are you working on besides being a board member? What else are you doing?
Oh my goodness, Robert, this morning I was listening to the U.S. Supreme Court oral arguments about whether or not there are reservations in Oklahoma. And it's a really, really important conversation to have around Indian country itself and what Indian country is comprised of, reservations and dependent Indian community, and how do we understand statutes like we were talking about with the Mashpee Wampanoags. So I'm also working on we're having a conversation tomorrow with the National Congress of American Indians. I'm going to be a panelist on their economic development response in Indian country to the pandemic. And that I can share a link with you, Robert, so you can tack on to that. I've published a paper on where I think we need to go in terms of economic diversification for Indian country, as well as economic inclusion for our people. And I love that kind of work. It stimulates me, but it's also very direct, hands-on, gotta do, let's do kind of work for Indian country.
That's amazing. Your family too, your niece is really involved and she's had to take action in Minnesota, and your mm-hmm. sister. Wow, your family is just moving and grooving. Really?
I would just tribute my mother, my grandfather, and that's the kind of lineage or history or community or family that I think all of us, Maggie and Michaela and I, you know, the people that we bond with, you know, we value so much. And that's what I think Wakan Teepee reflects as well, these strong bonds.
I'd like to add that one of my favorite things I've, you know, heard while being involved in this work is reiterating that our people have been and will continue to be so smart and innovative and caring and connected. And that Wakan Teepee right there, right? It's not, you know, what am I trying to say? It's not out of fate that it's right there. We have our mounds up above there. So our ancestors were put on those mounds up above there to look at that river, to have that view of that river. And Wakan Teepee is below those mounds. And everything is interconnected. And I think that when, you know, we talk about Wakan Teepee, Let's just say that a couple times, because sometimes it's hard for community members who are hearing about our work to talk about it to friends, because it's really, it can be challenging to non-Dakota speakers to say Wakan Tipi. And so Wakan, it's that there's an N at the end of that, but it's not fully pronounced. So we say that those are nasal N's. So when we're saying Wakan, it's that like nasal N. So Wakan, Wakan Tipi. Wakan Tipi.
Wakan Tipi.
Yeah.
Did that do better? Because I was doing this before.
No, that's perfect.
The day of Makaska.
Yeah. So it's just, and what a wonderful time to be, you know, reclaiming Dakota place names. So when we have this center built, it will be called Wakan Tipi Center. And I love being able to see our language here, you know, in a more permanent way as well.
Yeah. Maggie, do you have any final thoughts? That's awesome, by the way. That's really awesome. Maggie, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, you know, my final thought is just kind of building out what Michelle was just talking about, you know, helping people learn how to pronounce Wakan and Wakan Tipi Center. We are actually partnering right now with the Dakota language students at Bidote Learning Center in South Minneapolis to create some short videos, student produced short videos about how to pronounce the name of our center so that people can talk about our work and help support our work and feel really confident and comfortable, you know, when you know, that language is on your tongue and maybe it's a new language and maybe that's not part of your background. So a lot of non-Dakota people, it's not a part of your everyday language to use those words. So we want to try to do what we can to try to help people learn how to pronounce those words. So this is going to be a really fun video series. And again, follow us on social media. You'll be able to check out these videos from these Bidote students.
Well, whenever you speak the language, our ancestors are listening to us. And a great man once told me, if you want to learn the language, learn a word a day and replace it and never say it in English again. You know, and I'm working on that maybe every week, but it's a hard one. And I'd like to, I really learn a lot whenever I'm around you three. So I hope our audience did too, because it was an amazing hour. It went fast, and I'm just honored to be here. I think you guys could have done this without me.
Oh, Robert, thank you, Bianca, because you have brought out so many important issues and conversations. So thank you for your vision for connections and community. Really good work.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I really, you know, with my Native Roots radio show, I couldn't do it without your sister. She gives me 12 minutes of gold every week. And I really appreciate it. And it really, really brings along things in a good way, you know, and your family and all the families out here, Maggie, you and your family. And, you know, I just get teary eyed when I think about how you guys have all welcomed me into the community.
Beautiful. We are.
Yeah. And I just remember, Violet, when you had your vision for your radio show and, you know, oh man, to see how big this has come and, you know, how far this radio career has gone for you since we just started talking about that at Harding High School.
Right. Barry and I were going to host a show.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And thanks again for having us on. And we really support, you know, our family supports you. So, and everything that you guys do.
I know. And I appreciate that. It's definitely, we talk about you all the time and pray for your family too. Well, this has been fun. This is American Indian Month and live on KFAI. And we've been talking to Maggie Lorenz, Nishaya Bowman, and Patrice Canoes.
Dokshake.
Ainipi. Haijuoni.